You're listening to the oneofus.net podcast network. Hey, Matt Frank.
Yes, Chris.
I have a question for you that maybe you specifically can answer. What kind of beer do, you know, the giant monsters, the kaiju, drink?
I don't know, because, you know, beer is really sort of a human construct, and kaiju are sort of supposed to be, I mean, thematically, they're supposed to be above humanity and devices. And all that.
Let me stop you right there.
All right, fine.
What kind of beer do people who like kaiju and giant monsters drink?
Oh, Circle Brewery.
Circle Brewery.
That stuff's great.
So you too.
Sure, hell yeah.
Oh, it's right here in Austin, Texas. Circle Brewery, they have their brew pub. You can go check out all their beers right there, and they are the official sponsor for oneofus.net.
Hell yeah.
You're drinking a...
The Hefeweizen is pretty good.
Yeah, the Circle Blur. It's my favorite, too.
Yeah, I actually just like... I don't even like beer, and I like these guys. It's nice. It's a nice flavor to it. It's good stuff.
Check out Circle Brewing, the official sponsor for oneofus.net, and come visit them at their brew pub in Austin, Texas. OneOfUs.net is supported entirely by our subscribers, and that means you. You guys who are listening to this, we can't do this without you. Think about becoming a subscriber at the $2, $5, $10, or $25 level. Get lots of bonus content in our forums. And now our newest thing, we have a closed group on Facebook only for subscribers at any level. If you are already a subscriber or you just became one, please send an email to oneofusnet@gmail.com. Let me know what your Facebook page is, and I will add you to that closed group where we'll be having regular live videos and all sorts of special things, especially from the upcoming South by Southwest. You're not going to want to miss that.
When I signed up for this movie, I was really hoping for a sequel to Dragonheart. I feel like I misread the prompt.
You know, what I feel like is this is a prequel to Reign of Fire.
Ooh. Can we get an animated Reign of Fire sequel? Let's do that.
Oh, that'd be rad.
I don't have anything else. Like, what other dragon movie?
Dragon Slayer!
Peach Dragon!
What's
finally,
that?
We get a Peach Dragon sequel.
It is a little Peach Dragon
sequel to the remake.
I just want someone... I want them to remake Dragon Slayer, except they just need to keep the stop-motion animated giant puppet dragon, though.
Well, even keep that dragon. Like, build another movie around those scenes. Vermithrax, right?
Vermithrax pejoratives.
Why did this movie just start with Through the Fire and Flames? I mean, even just walk straight through the fire. Come on.
Oh, man, my fingers are already twitching on my imaginary rock band guitar, plastic guitar.
I can hear the clicking from here.
I actually had one of my teenage nephews over at the house and saw the rock band guitar. It's like, please hook this up, please hook this up. And I couldn't. I didn't have the
time. Is your old John. You're getting old. I'm a wave of Bowie knife in your face.
I just wanted time to set it up and really get into it. So
that's fine.
But the movie we are talking about is How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, or the third, and I believe final in the trilogy here.
It's pretty fucking final.
I'm Ben.
George.
I'm Matt.
And yeah, we're the people who got to see this one. Definitely a few of our others were sad they had to skip it. Some had to cancel last minute.
Well, and the others were chose to see Gaspar Noé's climax, which basically is the same movie we saw.
I mean, we did see the climax of the dragon story, so...
I'm just hearing climax a lot, and now I'm upset. It's a children's movie, people! Come on!
We were talking about how to mash up the two movies, and it basically how to climax your dragon.
it's an animal husbandry movie, Matt. Get your mind on shutter.
You gotta get there, and you gotta get under there. And the thing is about dragons, because they're reptiles, they probably have these things
called... This movie features a lot of different fluids coming out of dragons. Let's face it.
That's the thing I actually kind of appreciate about this franchise, is how fucking gross it is sometimes. It's just, dragons are spitting on stuff.
There's saliva, there's flame, there's poison, there's...
Acid.
Straight up acid coming out of
stuff.
Them.
So, yeah, I mean, the plot of this one is pretty much, you know, we have our same characters returning, and everything seems great as they're fighting the dragon hunters, but they pissed them off, and they hired basically... the greatest dragon assassin the world has ever known?
He's called him the Dragon Hunter.
It's F. Murray Abraham, Salieri himself, doing an unplaceable accent and really, like, chewing up the scenery in every line that he has. And I
personally just like loved him.
Yeah, Grimmel the, what do they call him? Grimmel the something. Grimmel the Grizzly, I think is what they called him.
Something like that. Yeah.
And he's,
yeah, Grizzly.
Yeah, he's considerably, I felt, more compelling and interesting than the last villain who was kind of
Drago.
Drago, who was kind of one note.
Yeah.
The Dragon Master.
The Dragon Master.
I'm the Dragon Master.
I'm one note. I'm sad because my arm got chewed off.
Even though, like, everybody in their village, you know, is missing an arm. Is
missing an arm and a leg.
The first movie was, Hiccup was 15, and then in the second movie he's 20, and this movie he's 21. So it's 1 year after the second movie.
Is it only 1 year? I guess it is.
One year. Yeah, 1 year.
Everybody is looking a little older.
Times.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone's a little older now. You know, that's an aspect I really appreciated of all three of these movies, that you really do get to see them.
Yeah, you do
kind of grow up. And I mean, not necessarily grow up, necessarily as in mature, because they're all still kind of idiots. And
to be fair, like...
Vikings.
Yeah.
Is that racist? I don't know if that's racist. sorry.
They're all white. It doesn't matter.
You didn't have a horgy-borg there. You're fine. So I got to admit, and I said this to George, I have never seen any of these movies all the way through.
Really?
When they first when the first one came out, I was kind of in that DreamWorks phase where I'm just like, I'm so tired of you.
This was really a surprise from DreamWorks when it came out in 2010.
In the first trailers, I was like, I don't know if this has anything for me. As much as I like a lot of the cast of the original, and most of them do return even three movies in.
Mm. I think the only person to not return this time was T.J. Miller, which I'm thankful for.
I saw that. Yeah.
And America Ferrera, I think, is replacement here.
America Ferrera is in it.
No, she's Astrid. I thought she was the replacement from the second one.
No, she's been Astrid since the start.
Really? Yeah. Then my memory's off.
But to my knowledge, she is.
I love Craig Ferguson being in this.
It's so weird seeing Jerry Baruchel as like a lead role like this. Right. Because wasn't he from Are You Afraid of the Dark? Or am I remembering him from something else?
He might have actually been on some Are You Afraid of the Dark.
Some Nickelodeon show. Jay Baruchel, Hiccup.
Yeah, I forget... I mean, he was in Almost Famous as the kid who wanted autographs and stuff, but...
I mean, and he's really great, like, making Goon and being in Goon.
Mm-hmm.
I liked She's Out of Your League is an okay movie.
It's not Undeclared, being the lead in Undeclared was the first place, like... And I noticed him as that kid from Almost Famous when I saw Undeclared, and I watched specifically, like, that was the first place where I... Really took note of him.
It's funny because we're looking at the Wikipedia, and I'm not seeing. I feel like maybe I must be going crazy, and I'm thinking of some other young actor,
some other scrawny Canadian kid that got big in Hollywood. Yeah,
you know, maybe I'm thinking about the kid who. Hold on.
No, he was in it.
He wasn't out of Afraid of the Dark.
Crazy.
He's also in The Worst Witch. Awesome. Yep.
The 98 Worst Witch.
Oh, cool.
I was going to say, but yeah, overall, I like Jay Baruchel. I think he does well with the character, though. It's kind of like, Hiccup, you know, the character when he was 15 with Jay Baruchel's voice kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
The 21 is like, look, we know Jay Baruchel's an adult. He's like in his 40s now. It's cool. But the voice should change with the character.
Which is funny because at one point they call that out, and there's like, what's his name? Tough Nut is like,
deeper voice.
He specifically says, like, this whole honking goose thing.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. I thought some of his bits were pretty good. I love that. It was like, stop walking with the limbs. Like, I'm missing a leg.
Yeah. I've got a parasitic twin. You don't see me. What did he say? He got a lot of really good lines in this. I mean, the side characters are basically one note or just straight played for laughs, as they've been since day one. I've seen all three movies, and I've seen a fair amount of the TV show as well. There was one on Nick, and then there was one on Netflix.
Yeah, it's moved a bit.
Yeah, and I haven't watched all of it, but I'm pretty familiar with this world and how it works and this universe and stuff. And
have you read any of the books?
No, I haven't.
Not to derail you. Yeah, they're very, very different and very much for kids.
Right, I was going to say.
More family. And
right.
Those are very much for kids.
Toothless, like, is completely different in the books.
Well,
I know that.
Not only that, but, like, they are a village of dragon trainers.
Right, and that's their whole thing is, like, it's not the crux of the first movie, which is the transition between dragon hunters to dragon trainers.
Right.
That's not in the books.
Right.
And Toothless is like a sickly little lizard that fits in Hiccup's pocket in the books. Mm-hmm. He's not this cool, like, stitch-looking black-skinned dragon.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a change.
What were you saying before about the animated film? You're familiar with the world.
All I was going to say was that, the first movie is like, I feel is actually personally, I think it's a classic. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the better animated films in my personal estimation that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's a favorite in our house. I mean, my wife walked down the aisle to the romantic flying theme from the first movie.
Wow.
So it's important to us, which says a lot because, she does not like the second one. But I think our feelings are complicated regarding the second one because I feel like it's a clunkier film.
Yeah.
And it's more awkward. This one I feel like is slightly better, but still there's a lot going on. It doesn't have that tightness of the first one.
Yeah, I was going to say, there are times like, you know, again, I know I'm not like the biggest fan and the guy who this is definitely for because it's definitely a closer to the series for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But still there's times where I'm like, I'm giving it my all, and then it's like you have like three side plots here, and you're giving them such imbalanced amount of time and focus. Like, there's a big side story with Toothless finding a Light Fury, which is the female version of the Night Fury.
Sure.
And it's just kind of like, I don't feel like that plot was ever balanced out. It's like, oh, she'll show up randomly. And evidently at one point she like warns him about a trap, but then he completely forgets about it. And he's like, oh, this means nothing to me. And
it's clunky.
And also that's another part. I will say her part is part of the villain's plan, technically, which I've never felt made sense. It's like, yeah, this, you know, he's supposed to be the greatest hunter of Night Furies. This is his one pride in his life is killing all of them. But evidently the female Night Fury, the Light Fury, is not that uncommon, because even all the traders were like, oh yeah, no, we just have her. It's like,
yeah, we just have this female Light Fury, which can turn invisible, so how did you get it in the first place?
And then his plan was like, oh yeah, I'll use her to lure him away, and then you'll just give him to me. I'm like,
what was your plan?
That never came up in the movie, and then basically, if it wasn't for Hiccup, you know, being so connected to him, you know, Toothless would have been gone forever because he gave the Light Fury back to nature to try to lure him away.
Yeah, like, they were just going to stay in Dragonland or whatever.
That's just kind of my biggest problem with this movie, is the villain's plan never makes sense. I also feel the villain is made absurdly omnipotent for most of the movie, where he just is aware of everything. He somehow trained his scorpion dragons to listen to him by poisoning him with their own poison, which
seems biologically
unbelievable. And then, like, the one time at the end when, of course, you have to beat the villain, he's not omnipotent to the most obvious attack that's going to hit him. And all of a sudden, everything falls apart immediately there. And it kind of... I mean, it's a kid's movie. I'm not going to, like, knock it off, like, 50 points off the score for it, but it's like... You make this guy out to be fantastic and amazing, but you kind of make the final fight feel just kind of cheapened to me.
I call it ID4 syndrome, because it's you essentially create this all-powerful villain, an Independence Day syndrome.
Right.
You have this all-powerful villain who, by rights, you should have pretty much no chance of beating unless something pretty severe has to happen, you know? I mean, I mean, there's ways around it, but they're not pretty, and they're probably not for kids' movies. But, you know, in Independence Day, they basically had to have this plot twist towards the end where it's like, oh, turns out that we use Windows 95 to send a virus because we've reverse engineered their technology.
They actually still use XP.
And I'm saying, right? And I'm saying that as somebody who loves Independence Day.
It was a Mac, by the way.
And
it was a Mac.
Fine, whatever. The point is that
they can't get viruses. That's how they beat them.
And I mean, and Lindsay Ellis made it. Shut up. And Lindsay Ellis made a really great video analyzing this, which I recommend everybody go check out. Where basically she said the reason why you don't see alien invasion movies as much anymore is because the aliens would be so powerful that they would pretty much destroy us. And as opposed to, we have a situation here where it's a kid's movie, the good guys have to win in the end. You want your villain to be threatening, though, so you've got to try to find that balance of, like, a threatening, omnipotent villain, and then find a way for the heroes to come out on top in the end. And this movie sort of fumbles with that. It doesn't quite stick that landing.
And I disagree on all of that.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Tell me then.
I mean, the plan. I don't need a villain to plan out every step of something. Like, the main thing is that he saw that Hiccup's strength was his weakness, and that, you know, the friendship between him and Toothless. And if he could drive a wedge between them, then they would both be weaker for it. And he thought that if Toothless fell in love, that he would just completely abandon Hiccup in a way that would make him completely predictable and just make all the wrong moves. And for the most part, that was right. That's what happened. And as far as, yes, it was fortuitous that Hiccup lured Toothless back, you know, to them in such a way that they could capture him, but that was kind of the plan. Like, they could have invaded the island at any point, and they were kind of waiting for, you know, that kind of confrontation, you know, to bring him back. I mean, that seemed to be the idea, but also to make them, to break apart the unity that they had. And then he also saw this village and was like, the village is nothing without their dragons. And why he was vulnerable to the attack at the end the way that he was is because he thought the village was nothing without their dragons. See, that they couldn't attack him in a way that would actually matter.
I think that is, though, Grimmel's whole point is that he doesn't care about the village and all the other dragons. He literally only cares about Toothless because he's a Night Fury. Mm-hmm. That's literally his whole motivation. So if his motivation was to make Hiccup weaker, that doesn't make sense to his pure character motivation. Mm-hmm. Makes sense to the guys who think he's working for them, but he clearly doesn't give a damn about those guys at all.
The weaker Hiccup is, as the chief of the village, the easier it's going to be for the people he's working with to get what they want. He does still need to help them get dragons.
I see what you're saying, and I understand that motivation. Yeah. I'm just saying that as far as the execution goes, it felt a little weak, personally. Like, it just, again, like, the whole, like, I get it. You know, you drive a wedge between them and separate them. But the thing is, again, he more or less sent the, I guess he was able to anticipate that Hiccup was going to go get Toothless and bring him back, and then he was gonna get him? I don't know. It felt a little too omnipotent in a way, and which is a movie conceit. I mean, I understand that.
I feel like we've gotten pretty deep on
sorry.
Without actually, like, kind of just giving a basic summary of where this movie kind of starts and what it's more or less about. But we've hit on it, but...
Well, I mean, that's part of the... I also think the confusion of the plot that we said earlier, where it's a bit complicated, because there's the whole side plot with, as I said, with Toothless and the Light Fury, and then that leads into... part of Hiccup's thing about the secret world of dragons, which literally gets all of a half a scene, it feels like. It's mostly, they show up like, oh, it is real. Okay, cool. This doesn't matter to the plot anymore. Let's leave.
I feel like they spent like 10 minutes there. Like,
it was
really, it's a really cool sequence.
It was beautiful. Yeah. This is a beautiful, really, I've always thought these movies were beautiful and really, really well made, visually especially. And I mean, okay, so the basic thing is that The basic beats are, Burke, the home of the Vikings, they're overcrowded at this point because Hiccup and his Vikings and his dragon riders keep rescuing dragons from
it looks
this.
It's like a Dr. Seuss village now.
Yes, it's comically overstuffed and colorful and just a mess now because there are all these dragons. Yeah. And as a result, they've made themselves into targets. So.
From all the, dragon hunters that they've stolen from.
Which apparently there's like this... I don't know if these guys were in the TV show or not. I mean, there's a particular character played by Kit Harington who's definitely from the TV show because he just kind of...
Part two.
Was he in part two?
Yeah. He was from part two who they're the first ones that they encounter and then... he turns and joins her side, I thought.
Man, I do not remember that.
Eret.
Eret,
son of whatever.
I think it's Eret, son of Eret.
Yeah, something like that. My point is that there was this whole thing with these warlords that are trying to also capture dragons. It's not entirely clear what they're trying to do other than just conquer the world
with dragons. With the dragon army,
But at the same time, it just, again, that felt a little underwritten, a little underdeveloped, but... Again, Again, the conceit of essentially being a children's film, which I know is not an excuse necessarily, but you know what? Everything worked just fine enough, I felt. I feel like I'm being overly harsh on it, because I think structurally it's a little wonky, but it hits the beats it needs to hit, which is like, Burke is a target. Hiccup recognizes that they may not be able to keep this up forever. Their enemies are getting more and more dangerous, especially with this new...
They've grown out of the space they're in.
Right. Especially with this new dragon hunter on their tail. So he's like, we have to go find this hidden world that my dad... And we're just now establishing in this third film.
Which gives us a nice way to incorporate...
It was nice seeing... It was nice seeing Stoic again. Yeah. And they're all... They always... Stoic has always been used really, really well in these movies because he has these great emotional beats centered around him and his relationship with Hiccup.
And his relationship with his wife in the second movie. There's a really beautiful moment.
That was really... That was very sweet and really well done. But yeah, so that's the basic conceit.
Vulcan,
is that it's basically...
Vulcan's the wife.
Yes. Kate Blanchett.
Well, I mean, I feel like we've bounced around it a bit, and Matt, you're definitely, as you said, probably maybe the most connected with this. Why don't you go into your final thoughts on it, you know, how you felt that it tied up the series?
I felt like it tied things up about as well as they could have. I personally, like, as a natural result of expanding on this universe and creating a series and a franchise out of it, it feels a little overstuffed, which, again, compared to that first movie, which is so tight and so well made... It's just kind of natural that it's going to start getting bloated and you've got all these disparate plot elements going in different directions. And you just kind of need to, I think you need to roll with that if you're going to watch these movies, which is a, I found is actually a recurring problem in DreamWorks sequels, DreamWorks animated sequels. I feel like Kung Fu Panda has a similar problem.
I agree.
Again, the sequels aren't bad. They're just not as tight as that first movie.
Right.
But yeah, I felt like it was perfectly enjoyable. It had some really cute moments. Not going to lie, got a little choked up towards the end. Sitting there just sitting next to Martin, just trying not to, like, don't let him see you cry. you know, I enjoyed it just fine. And there's some stuff in it that I was really, really charmed by. And, it was fine. It was fine. I'm probably going to actually give it an 8 out of 10 weird little bug-eyed dragon things.
Those are great.
I love them.
George?
I really enjoyed this. I feel like it was a great way to kind of bring back a lot of the more light elements of the first movie without losing, like, the really cool world building of the second movie. And it felt like a really satisfying conclusion of the story they kind of started out to tell with the first one. And, you know, as a coming-of-age movie, I think it was interesting the way they touched on the way people are trying to find their own identity and who they are. You know, if I'm this with my dragon, who am I without my dragon? And, you know, what type of leader am I? And just coming back to family and that and those sorts of themes, I feel like it did tie things together in a satisfying way. I mean, there are threads it picks up from the first one that I kind of forgot existed, and I really do like the way it tied things together. You know, this movie throughout is charming. There's some things that, you know, aren't as funny as they probably should have been. It didn't seem like the audience was laughing as much as I would expect them to.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, by the end, it was getting more laughs. Like, at the beginning, some of the more comic stuff wasn't getting any laughs, but towards the end, I feel like all the comic beats were starting to hit. So I didn't really think it was clunky at all. I felt pretty satisfied, and I feel like, you know, like the second one, revisiting it, there's a lot there that I had forgotten about that I really enjoyed, and I feel like this is a movie that will grow on me. So overall, I would give it, I'll go 8.5 out of 10. Oh God, I should have thought of this.
I always hate when I don't have something.
8.5 out of 10, TJ Miller's Never Gonna Work Again. restraining orders. I don't know.
Aww. Wah, wah.
Yeah, I gotta say, as you know, basically almost a complete outsider coming in, I do know the rough plots of 1 and 2 and seen at least parts of them. I mean, it's a fun, solid movie. It's cute. It's the characters, you know, it's again, as we discussed, the pretty much all the same actors came back. They know these characters. They've lived in them. I can't say I had any problem with any character or the performance with them because it felt like, yeah, you know this person and they feel like they're written correctly. They feel like, you know, exactly as they should be lived in. And that was great. I thought it was visually stunning as well. Sometimes when they're going over the ocean, though, I will say it's like, yeah, this ocean looks more realistic than some of your characters. You know, maybe don't go for a photorealistic ocean and slightly disproportionate human design. I don't know. But the visuals are great. As we said, when they go to the hidden world, it's gorgeous. I had so much problem with how they tried to plan out the villain and how they balanced out their side plots. I mean, again, as you guys have said, being a fan, it kind of fed into the stuff you wanted to see and you wanted to have from it. And I can even say the fan service stuff, I like, you know, you can, you know, laugh at fan service stuff when it's not something you're a fan of. But I think it all worked. I mean, there's a scene at the end that's basically, you know, the end of the Harry Potter series for this movie that, you know, I could easily laugh at. Then I did a little bit. It was like, this kind of feels forced, but the scene is so heartfelt and so well done. Like, you can't knock it for that. Overall, though, if you're coming in as an outsider like me, I can't say this movie's for you. It's really not going to sell you unless you have a connection to it, I think. And, you know, because having a connection to it does get you to forgive even some of the, you know, rougher edges on it. Either way, though, I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10 scorpion dragons that I want to know more about.
Yeah, those things are cool. Right? I liked them. Yeah. They were, that's the thing about the dragons in these movies, is that they're always cool designs.
So many points for cool dragon design. You don't see, dragons aren't in movies enough lately, and they all end up looking like Aragorn.
All I was going to say was that, yeah, they all wind up looking like, or the Brain of Fire dragons, but they're all these, kind of wyvern-y looking, like walking around on bat wings, and they kind of look like Smaug a little bit. And yeah, but in this movie, it's like, this one has two heads and like spits explosive fumes, and this one spits acid that's also flammable. This one like weirdly multiplies when no one's looking. Well, that was about.
I just pictured it as like Hypnotoad every time I looked at it. Don't look at the Hypnotoad, it'll curse you. I can't say that with a Scottish accent, otherwise I will offend all of Scotland.
Wait, that was different.
And on that note, we're sorry, Europe.